On today's show, I have a very special guest, Giovanna Gonzalez, who is the author of Cultura en Cash. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Debt Free Latina, the podcast where you can finally realize your dream of being debt free and feeling peace about your financial future. And now your host, Myra Alejandra Garcia.
Hola, hola. Thank you so much for being here on today's show. As I mentioned, I have Giovanna. Hi, Giovanna. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Myra. Thanks for having me on the show.
I am so excited about your new book. I started reading it. I just got it. So I'm excited to read through it. But the beginning is so great.
Thank you. I'm so excited
to see a Latina out there talking about money. I love having Latinas that talk about money on the show. So
yes,
it was so exciting to see that your team reached out. I was like, yes, of course. Yes, I know who she is. Yes.
Yeah. We've been following each other for a while.
So first things off, tell me about yourself. Where did you grow up? What did you see growing up regarding money? And tell us about yourself.
Yeah. So I am currently Chicago based. I've called Chicago home for 2 years, but this is not where I'm from. I am originally from a small agricultural border town in Southern California. It's called El Centro. It's okay. About 2 hours east of San Diego. Yeah. So I'm a border town kid. Always grew up with one foot on the Mexican side, the other foot on the American side. And what I saw modeled at home, definitely no money discussions. The only money discussions that were had were just, we don't have enough money, so don't ask us for money. So that meant that if the Scholastic school fair was in town and we wanted 10 bucks to buy a book, it was always no, like we don't have money for that. What I also saw a lot of at home was financial like emergencies that would happen. And my parents never had the means to pay for them. So they would always tap into, their brothers. So like my tios and tias, or they would tap into close family members to ask for a short-term loan. It was very, very common call David and he'll help us take care of this and vice versa. So that was what I saw modeled at home. No sort of money discussions about like, this is how you build your credit, this is how you avoid debt, none of that. Like most typical Latino households.
Yes. I think for me, my mom had a lot of cundinas, tandas.
It was
like, well, you pick a number and then that's like their savings. And my mom would also tap into pawning her jewelry. So that was how she would get out of emergencies that would arise and that she just had to get some money. So so interesting what our culture, like they don't talk about money. My mom never talked about money. And when she did, it was like, she didn't want to talk about it because it's like a taboo topic. Tell us what loud budgeting is.
Yeah, loud budgeting is a term that has been picking up a lot of speed, specifically on TikTok. But now a lot of major outlets are reporting on it, which is really cool. Loud budgeting is this concept where you clearly communicate your money goals and money values when you're being asked to spend some money on activities or products that are outside of those money goals. So for example, let's say that you're planning to save for a down payment and you're like, 2024 is my year. I am going to save enough money to have a down payment to buy a home in 2025, right? So if you've made that commitment to yourself, but then you're having friends that are constantly asking you to go on vacation with them because you enjoy traveling too, with loud budgeting, you say, hey, I actually have this goal for myself this year to have X amount for a down payment. So this year, I'm going to do a little bit less traveling. Let's find other ways to still spend quality time together, right? So it's instead of saying, no, I can't afford that, or no, I don't have enough money, it's saying I'm choosing to spend my money on other things, or I don't prioritize this enough to spend money on it because I'm planning for that. And I personally have been using Loud Budgeting for a long time. I'm sure you have too. It just didn't have a name. So that's why I love that they came up with a name, because now people are becoming more aware of this money mindset is really what it is.
Yes, I think having it also has that goal right front and center, right? Like this is what I want to do. And that's what I'm striving for.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. And being proud and owning those goals instead of, again, being ashamed or embarrassed that you can't afford it. And you could if you wanted to, but that's not where your priorities are. Your priorities are here. Yeah.
Right. That's great. Tell us what drew you to talk about money on social media.
Yeah. So I struggled a lot in my 20s with money. And that was really frustrating to me because I had felt that I had done everything right. I had been told to go to college, to get to graduate, get an office job. I had checked all those boxes, but I still found myself struggling with money and living paycheck to paycheck. And I was in a lot of bad situations that I couldn't get out of. Like, I live with a nightmare roommate. I had a toxic boss. Yeah, so all these situations that I couldn't escape because I didn't have savings to be able to get me out, or I didn't have rich parents that could bail me out. So I had this epiphany of, okay, the reason that I'm struggling with money, even though I'm making more money than my immigrant parents ever have, is because I'm not managing the money that I have well. I don't have goals for my money. I just spend whatever comes in. So that's when I'm like, okay, I can't keep using this excuse of like, well, I don't know how money works and this just always going to happen to me. So I made it a goal to learn how money works. And I did that by reading a bunch of money books. Once I felt that I had mastered the language and that I could come up with a financial plan for myself and have goals to pay off my debt, to build savings, to invest more aggressively. It was then that I'm like, not only do I want to get serious about my own finances, but I want to share this knowledge with other women of color, because I thought it was so unfair that some people get access to this information early in life and it really gives them a leg up in life. And some people like us, like the children of immigrants, again, we never have these money discussions at home. And it really is harmful to our money journey, right? If we knew a lot of these things sooner, maybe we would have made different choices. So I looked into ways to share my new financial knowledge with others. And I found a nonprofit called the YWCA. They were looking for volunteer financial educators. All they required was that you were a financial professional, which I was. I worked in investment management at the time. And I applied and I did that for almost 2 years. That was my life, basically my 9-to-5 corporate job. And then in my free time, I would volunteer probably once a quarter and teach like a budgeting 101 workshop, an insurance 101 workshop. And it was really nice because the nonprofit provided the curriculum and all I had to do was just show up and facilitate it. So it was really easy to share that knowledge with other women. And then in March of 2021, I decided to start sharing these same tips that I was sharing in my community on the internet via TikTok. And because of the bigness of the internet, there was just a lot more people I could serve. I started growing a following. I went viral. And that kind of took a life of its own.
That's so cool. I did read the first, I would say what, like chapter or two, I think. Yeah. And you talked about how you read a few books and you name a couple of the people that you dove into. And I had a very similar experience where I was, I would say, and I talk about this in the episode right previous to this one. And so how my journey started when I discovered Dave Ramsey, but then as I got trained through him and his team, and then I started having like a very different experience. I was like, you know, he's not talking to us. And I think you said that in the book where it's like, it's a different experience over here. Like, I don't have mom or a trust fund or somebody that's going to bail me out when things get tough. And although I had already reached and our family had reached debt freedom, there were still things that were happening that I was like, okay, this does not align with us. Like, this is not us. Like, he's not talking to us. He's talking to the white person. And I felt like that's a whole nother demographic. Like, we have our own thing. And another thing too was I remember there was a post that I saw where it was somebody talking about supporting the family. And I think you touched that on the book where like we do go to our family, we do help each other out, and that's part of our culture. And I was like, yes, like I saw my father every single paycheck in my childhood send money to Mexico to support my grandmother. And that was just until the day she passed, my father always supported. And I think that there's the disconnect of like, we have different cultural values that are beautiful.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no. Tell me a little bit. Did you see any of that growing up?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I saw it. I think I was able to process it more in my late 20s when I was going through my own financial journey and implementing the financial advice I was learning from these mostly white male authors, because back in 2018, 2019, when I started my financial journey, that's all there was. There really weren't a lot of BIPOC authors like there are now talking about money. So luckily I was able to stay away from Dave Ramsey. There was just something about him that his energy always turned me off. But I read a lot of Susie Orman, Gene Chatsky, David Bach, a lot of David Bach, because he has like 10 books. And yeah, it's just, I realized that when I was trying to implement this white financial advice with my Latino family, they would get really upset and they would be like, what are you doing? Like, this isn't how we do things in our culture. And I'm just like, well, this is what the money books are saying, like the people that are smart with money, right? So then I very much turn into the black sheep for implementing this white financial advice with my Latino family. But yeah, you do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I understood that with time and as I learned more about financial education, I'm like, there isn't one right or wrong way to navigate money. These money books don't acknowledge that different cultures have different money values. And for us Latinos, we're very family oriented. So our money experience is always going to be tied to our family in some way, whether it's providing a monthly allowance like your father did to your grandma, whether it's retiring your grandparents, whether it's being available to loan out money if there is some sort of financial emergency, or if you can't do any of those things, having those tough discussions where you have, where you set financial boundaries and say, hey, I can't help you with this. And I mean, I can write a whole book just on financial boundaries because our families are so enmeshed that we don't know boundaries. We're just like, what is this? You know, that's why people stuff. We are much closer than that. And we always look out for each other. So my book is really about teaching the first gen Latina a bicultural approach to money. So still learning how to take care of your own individual money needs and building wealth for yourself, getting yourself into a solid financial foundation, but also bringing your family along for the journey if that's important to you. So it's hard to strike a balance, especially in the beginning when you're young and you have an entry-level salary. Maybe you have a lot of college debt. But if it's important to you and you want to be able to give to family, the book offers a solution for how to do it without lighting yourself on fire and forgetting about yourself along the way.
I think that's great. Yeah, I think that's, you know, my mom used to say, my mom passed in 2018, but she would say, ay, tú y tu presupuesto tan agarrado. Like that, I've shared that on the podcast many, many times, but that was her perception of when we were getting out of debt and we were getting organized. I mean, we knew nothing about money, but during the journey, I remember her just really being like upset over the fact that I was setting boundaries, but I was also being helpful when things would come up with the extended family. And I was like, nope, nope, nope. But then I had to learn to like balance that. Because I didn't want to be like told, ay, Mayra, tú y tu presupuesto tan agarrado, because that really hurt my feelings. I just remember thinking, like, I'm just trying to help my family out. Like, I'm just trying to get out of this debt. I'm just trying to get organized. What?
I can relate to that so much because I would face similar criticisms for being tighter with my budget so that I had the means to pay off debt and to build savings, right? And instead of being applauded like a white family would applaud their child for making these smart money moves, I was called a coda, a cuenta chiles, you know, so all you care about is money, where it's just like, you know what? Like, we're all financially unstable. Somebody has to get it together to be able to help each other out, you know, and sure enough, you know, it's hard to deal with those criticisms as a first gen Latina, because we very much seek our family's approval. That's very important to us. So when we get these criticisms, it's very easy to think, well, am I doing something wrong? Should I just do things the way that they've always done things? But I had this realization that if I keep doing what my mom's done her whole life, I'm going to be broke just like her. And I said, I need to move differently. And sure enough, with time, as they see that you kind of have more financial stability, they're like, oh, like, tell me about this. How does this work? You know, once they see it working for you, then they're more open to kind of seeing how to learn them for themselves.
100%. She came around, but it took a long time.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more. I know you shared during that last piece that inspired you to write Cultura en Cash. But was there anything else that just really motivated you to write this?
Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of culture clashes with my family because, again, implementing all that was available, which was white financial advice. There were situations where a family member needed me to charge $7,000 on a credit card to pay for an emergency surgery. And I said, I don't have the money. I can't pay for this. And that was like World War III with my family. Like, how dare you? This person needs your help and you have good credit and you should be able to just say yes. That's the only acceptable answer. And I got a lot of pushback. And again, it was very confusing and hurtful to me as a young adult, just trying to get myself into a better financial position, but constantly being criticized by my family. And that's when I learned that it's because there's very different money cultures in how the typical white middle-class American navigates money and how most Latin Americans handle money. So white middle-class Americans and like the Dave Ramseys, they're very much like, you know, you're on your own journey. You pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You don't ask for help. Never set foot inside a restaurant, right? Until you're out of debt or whatever he says. Yeah. So if you have any sort of emergency, like you take care of it and you figure it out. You don't tell other people your problems. We're with us because we're so communal and so family oriented. Family is the first people that we go to when we need help, right? So I'm not saying one culture again is better than the other, but they're very, very different. And if you don't know how to navigate both, that's when there's that culture clash and you can have a lot of friction and arguments with your family. So I've really had to lean into my bicultural identity with my family because they're like, you're not acting like a Mexican. You're not acting like this. And I say, I'm not Mexican. I'm Mexican American, you know, so to again, own that bicultural identity, because I can't pretend like I'm living my life in Mexico, because at the end of the day, I'm not. I'm living my life in the States, right? So I really need to be able to balance both cultures according to my values and also in a way that it won't be harmful to my finances, but also honor my heritage and my cultural values that are important to me. So yeah, that was a whole discovery process in itself. And it's something that nobody talked about. And I'm like, this needs a book of its own. So I was really happy that I had the honor to write this book, because it was a book I desperately needed when I was having all these money problems with my family.
Yeah. And I think that's so beautiful, because we, as bilingual and bicultural, we can take the best of both worlds and make them our own, you know, and we can take, and that's going to look different for you. It's going to look different for me, but we can take what we perceive as the best things of each culture and blend them into this beautiful mix of, you know, I think another thing that I had to learn along this journey was, you know, in my Hispanic culture, I was trained to people please. And that was really engraved in who I was as a child. I had to make sure that, you know, everybody around me was happy. Everybody was, you know, I was helpful and serve people. And, you know, that's part of our culture. But I had to, as an adult, really look and see how damaging some of that is in outside of, you know, your family and how you sometimes bring that to work and all of that. And I've had to learn to kind of unlearn that. Right.
Yeah.
And really ask myself what feels good. And I think that's kind of what I've been able to do with my money, where I've been able to apply some of the things that I was trained in. And I feel like I was totally indoctrinated. And I know that sounds so like harsh, but at one point in 2010, I totally was, because I knew nothing else. So this sounded so good at first. And then when I really started studying it and really like going through the training, I was like, wait a minute, wait a minute here. This does not feel good. And that's where it's like, if something just tugs at you that does not feel good, like you should question it, because it's probably your values kind of giving you that like alert.
A warning sign.
Yeah.
No, totally. So, and what I like to argue is that I think one culture, money culture, the American individualistic money culture, is very selfish. But I think ours, the Latino culture, money culture, is very selfless. So, you know, there has to be something in the middle, right? Where you're not too selfish and you're not too selfless and self-sacrificing and always putting everybody's needs above your own, because you as an individual matter too. So again, it's about coming up with that mix or that blend that feels right to you. And like you said, it'll be different for you, me, and the next person, because we all have our own money goals, our own values, and we get to choose as first gen.
Yeah. Another thing that reminds me when you brought that up right now was, you know, the Mexican culture are very, they live in the present. And the American culture lives in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one thing that I learned, I was watching a couple YouTube videos because I love to travel to Mexico. And one of the things that they said was the culture in Mexico lives in the present. And that's why they know how to party. You know how to enjoy the moment. Like the culture just really enjoys the moment. And they're not thinking a whole lot on the future. They do, but not to the degree that Americans do. Americans sometimes, if you reverse it, Americans live in the future and are so focused on the future that forget to live for today. Yeah. Like they forget to enjoy today and be grateful for today. So that was something else that I have really started applying in the last, I would say, year, where I'm like, no, I'm gonna save for my future because that's wise. But at the same time, I'm also going to travel a whole lot more because that's what
I agree.
I really enjoy.
Yeah, no, I had that too. When I first started my money journey, I was really into the FIRE movement and I was all about investing so I could retire early. And then in the last few years, I've had health challenges. I had a hysterectomy last year. I had a couple lumps in my breast the year or two before. So it, unfortunately, it's things like that that are like, of course, it's important to invest for the future and for a rainy day, but today matters too. So I'm the same way, where there's a balance of future and present, and still enjoy what makes you happy today. Cause life isn't just about paying bills and saving for the future and dying. You have to enjoy your life today. So I completely agree with you. I had that realization too, of like, these white money books are teaching me too much about the future.
Yeah. It's all focused on that. And, oh my gosh, that reminds me of a conversation I just had with my mother-in-law last night. So I told her, I said, okay, we're going to go to Morelia in April. I was kind of breaking down all the stuff. And she's like, you know, I've been thinking about where we're staying in Morelia. And I was like, yeah, you told me you wanted to go to Marco Antonio Solis's hotel. And she's like, yeah, I know it's really expensive, but you know, you only live once, and I'm not taking this money to the grave. So let's just book it. And I just, like, I know that it's like, okay, ni tanto ni nada, but like, I mean, she can totally afford one or two nights there. Like, she can totally do it. And she told me when we were at the concert last year, like, she really wanted to look this up because it was up on the screen. And I was like, well, we're going now. Do you want to book that hotel or not? So that just reminds me of.
It's important to enjoy the fruits of your labors, for sure. And, you know, if that's what makes your mother-in-law happy, she should spend money on that, like shamelessly, right?
Yes, for sure.
Feel free.
How can people find you, Gigi?
Yeah. So if you go to my website, thefirstgenmentor.com, I have all my handles that I'm active on. I'm active on TikTok. That's the First Gen Mentor. On Instagram, it's Gigi, the First Gen Mentor. And I'm also a LinkedIn creator. And if you go to my website, Cultura en Cash, you can learn more about my best-selling book. I've gotten almost, I'm close to 100 reviews, 5-star reviews. So people are really enjoying the book. And there's also a link where you can access the introduction chapter via PDF or audio file if you want to check that out first before buying the book.
Awesome. And like I said, it's so good. I cannot wait to finish it. I dove in as soon as I got it from Amazon and I was like, oh my gosh, this, she is totally talking to me.
I love that.
So thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you for having me on, Myra. It was such a good time.
All right, thanks. I'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening to Debt Free Latina. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you can take Myra with you on your journey to become debt free as you build financial wealth. Looking for more? Follow Myra on Instagram at debtfree.latina, Facebook at debtfreelatina, and online at debtfreelatina.com.